The confirmation hearings for President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet nominees got underway this past week. Perhaps the most watched was the hearing for Attorney General nominee Senator Jeff Sessions. While Sessions' record of service at all levels in his career show actions which demonstrated a sense of law, order, and duty to those he was serving, the claims by his opponents hinge on one word, right, racism. With us now to discuss the Sessions confirmation hearing, which he's been writing about at the National Review as a National Review Institute, William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism, Alexandra DeSantis. Thanks for being here today, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me.
And it's nationalreview.com, as if you did not already know that. And you wrote a couple of articles on the last few days about the confirmation hearings, but I want to start with the one that is dated January 11th, the myth of Jeff Sessions' racist crusade against voting rights. And it seems like there were a few people, both in the gallery as well as those asking questions, who are conveniently forget elements of history and fact, do they not?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that most people don't seem to know the actual record of the case in question, at least the one I wrote about, which just sort of the hinge of the claim that Sessions opposes voting rights for Black Americans, which simply is not the case.
And that the vote, it's kind of a nuanced case, and it's kind of tough to verbally communicate, which is why we've linked to your that article that I mentioned, the myth of Jeff Sessions' racist crusade against voting rights. It was basically Black candidates who were having voter fraud committed against them, strangely enough, by Black candidates, but the Black candidates were basically being fronted by a white organization. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there were Black people on both sides of the case, and it's clear the side that Sessions was representing probably was motivated in some sense by racial animus, despite also having a Black candidate. But the fact of the matter is that Sessions was just the U.S. attorney for Alabama at the time, and he was called on by the state to represent a particular Black candidate, in this case, for claims of voter fraud against him. And it turns out that there was a lot of evidence that voter fraud had been committed. The people that Sessions charged, the Black people and the Black activists who were charged, ended up being acquitted. But there clearly was evidence that there was some tampering going on there.
And it was an FBI inspection, as you write, of the ballots revealed 75 appeared to have been erased or remarked, and that number was later reduced to 27. But still, the act was still the act. And ironically, the son of one of the Blacks that Sessions indicted and was later found innocent, Albert Turner Jr., who was currently the Perry County Commissioner, endorsed Sessions for his nomination for Attorney General.
Yeah, not only that, but he said, you know, I know this man, and there's no reason to believe that he's a racist. He's never been motivated by any kind of personal animus against Black Americans. He was just doing his job in this case, and I think liberals have been very quick to just kind of obfuscate the details related to that case.
It's kind of odd how the people who are making these accusations against Jeff Sessions and others within the Trump cabinet nominees, to be sure, they're strongly against a rush to judgment. But isn't that what they're doing with these claims of racism?
Oh, absolutely. It's all about which side you fall on. They don't want you to rush to judgment about their people or the causes they care about. But they're quick to do so when it's something they have a gut reaction against.
There were a couple of people who were testifying against Jeff Sessions of note, certainly made the news, John Lewis, Representative John Lewis, and current U.S. Senator, former mayor of Newark, Cory Booker. John Lewis, by all measure, I mean, you can't take away the fact that he was one of the people there at the crux of the civil rights movement. But when someone like a John Lewis steps forward and says what he says about Jeff Sessions, is Lewis just really tarnishing his own heritage, I guess, or his own legacy by saying some of the things that he said this past week?
I mean, I think in the eyes of progressives, he will always be a hero, and he should be a hero for his civil rights work. But it has to reflect poorly on him if you're looking at all the facts that he's willing to step forward and attack a man who's never shown any type of racial animus in any way and who's proven through his record that he is able and willing to defend the rights of all Americans.
And then, as I mentioned, Cory Booker, Senator, currently Newark mayor, formerly not very successful mayor, by the way, we've talked about frequently here on the show. What, was he taking a stand or is he just starting to lay? Some people think he was laying the foundation for a 2020 run for president.
I think the latter, yeah, that must be part of what factored into his decision to testify against Sessions because he didn't present any new information. He's really just a matter of, well, you know, Jeff Sessions approaches these issues that I care about from rather than a progressive standpoint, and therefore he can't do that. True, you know, Sessions voting rights, he cares about women's rights, he cares about, you know, LGBT rights, he cares about all these conservative approach, which is one that Booker doesn't like. So he wasn't presenting any crazy new information against Sessions. It was really just a very politically motivated, kind of a baldly political move, I think.
Start with Alexandra DeSantis, who writes for the National Review. She's also National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism. NationalReview.com is where you can find her work and the other journalists with the National Review, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. I watch the hearings because I'm a little junkie, and you never know what you're going to see, and certainly cases like this, there was no disappointment with some of the protesters. Do you ever wonder how some of those protesters get in the room, considering how it's like, at what point does the guard say, oh, no, you won't be a problem, come on in?
Yeah, it is a little bit odd. I was surprised that they may just have a policy of not removing anyone until they're actually behaving disruptively. But
I guess you can't prosecute the criminal until they do the crime, but such is the case. You also wrote the day before on January 10th, Democratic obstructionism on cabinet nominees. The GOP did not do this to Obama. When you look at the scale of what the Democrats are claiming or setting out to do, futile as it is, but I think Chuck Schumer basically said, we're going to try to drag as many of these out till March if we possibly can, with eight of the nominees really being within in the crosshairs, Rex Tillerson, Jeff Sessions, Mick Mulvaney for the office of, for the OMB, Betsy DeVos, who we know she's against teachers union, so she's got the bullseye on her forehead, obviously, Representative Tom Price for HHS, Andrew Puzder for Labor Secretary, and Scott Pruitt, who is for the EPA and is a global warming denier. When you look at the what the Democrats are declaring they're doing to Trump's nominees, and you turn back the clock to Obama nominees, how much of a contrast is there?
Oh, it's like night and day. I mean, in 2009, you know, the vast majority, Obama had appointed or picked most of his cabinet nominees by the inauguration. And if you look at the numbers, the Senate confirmed almost all of them right off the bat. You know, I think nine of them were confirmed within the first 6 days of Obama's presidency, and with vast majority of Senate Republicans voting for him or for the nominees in question, because they, you know, they weren't causing any kind of problems like this. I think they only opposed one nominee because that would be the Labor pick, Hilda Solis, because she wouldn't answer any direct questions about her record or her policy positions. And that was the only one that GOP senators opposed. And, you know, there were some that, you know, more or less Republicans voted for. But in most cases, the vast majority of the GOP supported all of Obama's nominees because that's sort of the political norm.
And yet it's almost a blanket statement that the Democrats want every nuance and every I dotted T crossed on ethics form applications before some of them would even like to see the nominees get to the table. There was, I forget who it was, but someone on CNN said regarding Rex Tillerson that Tillerson should be putting forward 50 years of his business practices for ethics review.
I mean, how old even is he? I mean, what was he, 13?
Yeah. Well, you know, that lemonade stand, you know, we have to look and make sure he wasn't cheating the kids out of a nickel there.
Right.
So when you look at the roster, I mean, there's still some nominees still to start the process. Are any of them at risk? I mean, everyone's thinking that Marco Rubio could actually be an interruption for Tillerson. But other than that, and maybe even Rubio might just wait for let to go to a Senate vote and then cast his no vote there, but let it get out of committee. But do you think there's any of the nominees who are at risk of not making it out of the confirmation?
I don't think so. I mean, like you said, I think Tillerson is the most at risk because the Democrats just don't have the numbers, especially since they killed the filibuster rule. They just don't have the numbers to drag this out. They don't have the numbers to oppose any of them or to effectively oppose any of these nominees unless they can poach a few GOP senators away to also vote against the nominee. And I think the only person who, you know, any GOP senators really prominently oppose it is Tillerson.
And the likely candidates, at least at the point, the points of concern are Rand Paul, John McCain, and Lindsey Graham.
Correct. And Marco Rubio.
And Marco Rubio, correct. So follow along with the process because there's still some of the party still to go and some of the names still have to step forward. A lot of them are familiar with the people who are who'll be asking the questions, so that does streamline the process, and a lot of them have their accomplishments that can't be denied. One springs to mind, Linda McMahon, with the Small Business Administration Administrator, who better to help small business than to someone who's built a small business into a big business. But again, to be determined and to follow along, National Review is one of the places to go. NationalReview.com is one of the key places to get the facts and the real story, especially from Alexandra DeSantis, who is writing for National Review. She's also a National Review Institute William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism. Alexandra, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.